Appreciate an interest in your prayers this morning and pray that God would bless us to look into His Word for a few minutes and pray that it will glorify our Savior Jesus Christ by meeting together this morning. Esther chapter 4 verse 14, there is a verse that we'll read and then look at the story surrounding it. Mordecai sends the message to Esther, and he says this little phrase right here: "For who knoweth whither thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Who knoweth whither thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? I believe that God has us here for a reason. I believe that each and every one of us have a purpose in life. I believe that God is a God of purpose. That's not saying that I believe that God absolutely predestinates everything, but I do believe that God is active and He's working in our life. And not only did God secure and wrap up salvation for us through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, but I believe that God is working in our life each and every day. And I believe that we ought to be looking for and asking God to show us opportunities to serve Him by serving others. And I believe if we're looking for those opportunities, Galatians chapter 6 says, "As we therefore have opportunity." Old brother Cecil Daugherty was in his 80s, I believe, and when he preached one of his final sermons, and he said that he looked back on his life, and he said, "I realized that there were many opportunities," and the title of the sermon was "Missed Opportunities." And he said, "I looked back over my life, and I realized that God had sent me some opportunities along the way that I didn't pursue." And he began to specifically state some of those opportunities that he mentioned. I believe that as children of God, we should be looking for opportunities to honor and glorify our Savior Jesus Christ, to the praise of Jesus Christ, and to the glory of Jesus Christ. Let's go back and let's look at this. Let's look at this story and the accounts that surround this verse. In the first chapter, and we're going to paraphrase several of these first chapters here. In the first chapter, it talks about King Ahasuerus, and he has a tremendous kingdom, and he wanted to show it off. And so he had some large banquets and some large parties, and with the people, the wise men that served him, the princes and all the others that were around him, he wanted to show off his grandeur. He wanted to show off his splendor. And then he had a little bit too much to drink, and he wanted to show off his wife, Queen Vashti. And so he decides to call Queen Vashti, and he sends the message to her that he wants her to come and to parade amongst all of his friends that were there. He wanted to show others how beautiful the queen was. But Queen Vashti, she wasn't interested in that. And so she told the report to go back. She sent the report back to the king that she was not interested in that. And as a result, she was not going to do it. Well, you didn't tell the king no. You didn't last long in the presence of the king if you told him no. And so the king was enraged. He had great fury when Vashti delivered the report back that she was not going to parade before all of the folks that were there so that they could see her beauty. And so after she had delivered that message that she was not going to participate in this at all, then it says that the wise men got together. They had a conference meeting, if you will. The wise men got together, the princes got together, and they said, you know what, you need to do something about this, because if you don't do something about this, then all the other men are going to have problems with their wives. If she is allowed to tell you that she's not going to do something, then that's going to carry through, and it's going to affect all the other women in all the other lands, and the other women are not going to respect their husbands. And so as a result, you cannot let this get by. You can't just turn a blind eye to it. You need to do something about it. And so it says that, forgive me, I'm going to change into my old glasses. I think my old ones work better than my new ones. And so I hope that it helps with liberty as well, but pray for me. So they call for a meeting. They have a conference meeting. They call for a meeting. And they said, King, we make some recommendations to you. We recommend that you remove her from the place of authority, that you strip her of all of the things that belong to her as being the queen, and that you give that to somebody else. And we want this to be something that is announced. We want a mass email to go out. We want you to put it on Facebook. In fact, you might even tweet it to let everybody know about it, that she's going to be stripped of her position. She's going to be stripped of her authority. She's going to be stripped of all of the benefits she has in that role. And we want all the other women to know that they stand in jeopardy of the same if they decide to pursue that course. And so it says that they sent out a declaration. They sent out letters to all of the provinces and every province. And it says, according to the writing thereof, to the people after their language, that, and this was the content of it, this was the body of it. It says that every man should bear rule in his own house, and that it should be published according to the language of every people. So they felt like they'd taken care of that issue. So after this, it said that the wrath of the king was appeased, and of the other men as well. So they get together and they have another conference meeting. And they said, King, we want to make a suggestion to you. We want to suggest that you pick out a new queen. And so they said, let's get all the fair maidens of all the lands together, and let's have a beauty contest. And let's see who qualifies for this beauty contest that might qualify as the new queen. Now, I believe that God works behind the scenes a lot of times that we don't know anything about. We can look back and we can see the hand of God working, but at the time, oftentimes we can't understand it. We may not understand why things are happening the way they are, but we can trust, and that causes us and allows us and encourages us to walk by faith, that God knows what's good for us, and that God's going to take care of us, and that God's going to deliver us. So it says that they had a beauty contest. And in this beauty contest, there was a young man, and his name was Mordecai. And Mordecai heard about this beauty contest. Mordecai was a Jew, and he entered his cousin. It said that it was his uncle's daughter. His uncle's daughter was named Esther, and her mother and father had apparently died when she was young, and so her cousin Mordecai, very likely was older than she was, took Esther in, and it says that basically he raised her as his own. And there began to be a bond between Esther and Mordecai. And she had a great respect, and the scriptures say that she honored Mordecai, almost honored him as if it was a father figure in her life. And so when Mordecai said something to Esther, she took heed to it. She took it serious. Mordecai says to Esther, he said, it says that Esther was beautiful to look upon, that she had a wonderful countenance, that she was absolutely beautiful. And Mordecai suggested, he said, Esther, I recommend that you enter into this beauty contest. I'm paraphrasing this a little bit. You can go back and read it yourself, but I just want to get through the first couple of chapters right here. It says, I want to recommend that you enter this beauty contest, Esther. And no doubt in the mind of Mordecai that God was impressing Mordecai. That God was impressing Mordecai to encourage Esther to even participate in this beauty contest in which a queen would be chosen. God doesn't speak to folks today in an audible voice like he did when he spoke to his disciples, or he hasn't spoken to me that way. But God does speak to his people by impressions. You know what I'm talking about. Sometimes you may decide to pursue a course that is not the course that God would have you to pursue. And God impresses you. Maybe he'll impress his word upon you. Maybe he'll give you an uneasy spirit. But God will impress you to not pursue a course. Or God can impress you to pursue the course that he would have you to go. And God puts other people in our lives to give us direction. Just like I mentioned Sister Pat, God puts other people in our lives. And that helps us along our journey as well. No doubt God was impressing Mordecai. But he says to Esther, he says, Esther, and maybe God impressed Mordecai this as well. He says, Esther, when you enter into this contest, don't reveal to the people that you are of a Jewish lineage. And so Esther didn't. When Mordecai told Esther something, Esther listened to it as well. And it says that there was a year of purification. You can go through and read all of that. And then they had the beauty contest. And as they began to parade the different women, that it was narrowed down. And in the eyes of the king, Esther was chosen. No doubt, when you see the rest of the story, I believe that God impressed the king in choosing Esther. And so Esther was anointed as queen to the king and was often in the presence of the king. And Mordecai would go almost daily to the gate of the king's house. And Mordecai had a contact. He had someone that was the go-between that he could talk to and say, how is my cousin Esther faring? He had a real heart for her well-being. And one day, when Esther was at the king's gate, one day when Mordecai was at the king's gate, he overheard two of the king's chamberlain. It says two of the king's, basically his right-hand men, and they were conspiring to take the king's life. I don't think it just so happened that Mordecai was there. I believe that God blessed Mordecai and impressed him, and he overheard what was about to take place. So when Mordecai overheard this story, that there were two men that were conspiring to take the king's life, Mordecai delivers that message to the individual that had personal contact with Esther in the king's house. And it says that Esther then, she checked this out, she made it known, and And sure enough, it was legitimate. There were two men when they began to investigate it. They realized that there were two men that were that were designing together to take the king's life. And so as soon as that happened, they didn't have delayed punishment. They had capital punishment. It says as soon as that happened, they hanged those two individuals that were conspiring to take the king's life. And it says that Esther not only had checked it out, certified it, it says that they made an inquisition was made of the matter. When they found it out, they hanged them both on a tree. And it says, and by the way, it was written down in the book of the Chronicles. That's all it says. That's an interesting point to remember. They just happened to write this account down. They wrote down the history of it, that this man named Mordecai had reported that there were two men that were at the gate and they were conspiring to kill the king. And when they checked it out, that sure enough they were. And so they just went ahead and hanged these two men. And they pinned this down in the book of the Chronicles, just as a record. That's interesting to note, and we'll see why after a while. Well, there was another character, and he was a character. His name is Haman, and the king promoted him to be his right-hand man. He was right there next to the king, and he had the greatest position of authority. He had all the power. And not only that, he had a personal audience with the king all the time. He had a great position, and he also had a problem with pride. He had a great position, and he wanted everybody else to know about it. In fact, he wanted everybody else around him to honor him. When he walked down the street, he would lift his lapel, and he expected everybody to honor him and to praise him because he was second in command to the king and because he had such an audience with the king. And it says that Haman was advanced, and as he was walking around, people would bow to him and they would reverence Haman. And it says the king commanded, it says the king could had given him great authority, wealth, it says. But as he was walking down past this man named Mordecai, Mordecai must have known that there's only one that's to be revered. That's the Lord. And so when Haman walked by Mordecai, everybody bowed down to Haman except Mordecai. It did not impress Mordecai one bit that Haman had all this authority. It did not impress Mordecai one bit that Haman had an entrance to the king's house and that he had the king at his audience and his beck and call. And it didn't impress Mordecai at all, and Mordecai did not bow down and worship Haman. Mordecai, I believe, knew that he had not a literal king, but he had as his king the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And Mordecai refused to bow down and give reverence to Haman as he walked by. That just infuriated Haman. He couldn't stand it. In fact, it says that he couldn't. That when Mordecai, when he talked to the others, it even made him more irate. It says Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not, nor did give him reverence, and then Haman was full of wrath. And he thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone, and For they had showed the people of Mordecai, wherefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom. Mordecai revealed to the people, and the people knew that Mordecai was a Jew. So in order to, Haman wanted to just slay Mordecai. But he thought, in addition to slaying Mordecai, we're just going to slay all the Jews. In fact, we're just going to slay all of the people of the land that Mordecai is associated with, because he says, I'm so wroth with this man named Mordecai. Verse 18 says, there is a certain people. Haman goes to the king and he says, there's a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of the kingdom. And their laws are diverse from all people. Neither keep they the king's laws. Therefore, it is not for the king's prophet to suffer them. If it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed. Haman going before the king, and he says, let it be written that they'll be destroyed. And he says, and I'll pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those that have charge of this business to bring into the king's treasuries. And it says, the king took his ring from his hand, and he gave it to Haman. And it says that he certified this request. This certification went throughout, it tells us in the latter part, it goes throughout all of the land, throughout all of the provinces, that there's a time that's going to be set forth, that there is a commandment that's given, that's going to be set forth to destroy all of the people of the Jews. The Jews begin to mourn. The Jews begin to pray. They begin to dwell in sackcloth and ashes. Great mourning came upon the land. And when the report got back to Mordecai of what had happened, it says that Mordecai went in, he rent his clothes, he put on sackcloth and ashes, went into the midst of the city, and he cried with a loud and bitter cry. It also says that he went before the people with great mourning among the Jews, fasting and weeping and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and in ashes. Now keep in mind that his cousin was in the king's house. She was anointed, appointed queen. When Esther heard the report, when the messenger came back and gave Esther the report about what Mordecai was, the state of mourning that he was in, how that he was dwelling in sackcloth and ashes, then it says that Esther sent some clothes to Mordecai to put on. But he was in such mourning that Mordecai chose not to put on the clothes. He wanted to remain in mourning. So the rest of chapter 4 tells us that Mordecai sends the message to Esther. And he says, Esther, you have an audience with the king. And you need to use that opportunity that you have to plead mercy on behalf of the king, that he might change this decree so that all the people of the land that are Jews are not going to be destroyed. Esther sends a message back to Mordecai. Mordecai apparently at the gate of the king's house. And so Esther tells the messenger and sends the message back to Mordecai. And she says, you don't understand. I don't really have an audience like you think I do to go into the king's house. You don't understand that it doesn't work that way. In fact, it's been over 30 days since I've been called to go before the king, and you don't just volunteer to go before the king. It doesn't happen that way. I don't recommend doing that. I don't really have the influence with the king that you think I have. I don't really feel inclined to do it, because if you go to the king, if you go before the king, before the king calls you, your life might be taken. Unless the king extends mercy to you to have an audience to be able to speak your request, then your life could be taken. And so Esther says, I really don't think that that's what I want to do. So Mordecai goes before her again. He sends the message back to Esther. And he says, Esther, don't think for a moment that you yourself are going to escape this decree that has been placed upon all the Jews. That you yourself will fall in that same category, and very likely even sooner than others, because you are now in the king's house, and that is not going to give you an out just because you're there. Esther, you need to think about this seriously. Esther, I recommend, and this is what he says right here. It says, Mordecai commanded to answer Esther. He says, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, I believe Mordecai was impressed that God was going to grant some degree of deliverance to the Jews. But he said, Esther, you may not be in that group. And look at what he says right here. He says, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place, but thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. Esther, you and I very likely are going to be destroyed. God may spare the Jews. God may use somebody else to spare the Jews, but you and I stand to be destroyed in this. And he says, Esther, he says, who knoweth? I think it's interesting that it's not written here that God predetermined before the foundation of the world that this was going to happen. I believe Mordecai was impressed, but I want you to look at how he described it right here. He says, Esther, who knoweth whither thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Esther, this may very well be the reason that you are here. This may very well be the reason that you are to be used of God to intercede on behalf of the Jews. God may have you here for this reason. I want to tell you, I believe God has you here for a purpose. I believe he has you here today for a reason. We understand in Matthew chapter 5, verse 13, it says, ye are the salt of the earth. You know who he's talking about right there? That's Jesus Christ talking to the disciples. But you know, the preacher is in my Bible, and I'm sure it's in yours. It's written in red. That means to me that Jesus Christ, the perfect preacher, is delivering this message. And Jesus Christ is not only delivering this message to the followers that were there in his time, but this message is to you and I today. He says right here, ye, that's each one of you right here. Ye are the salt of the earth. But if the salt hath lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden under the foot of men. Ye are the light of the world, a city that is set on a hill that cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel. He says, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. He says, let your light, that's each one of you right here, young folks, that's you. You have a special and a tremendous opportunity in your youth to shine the light that God has given you. He says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and that they may glorify your Father which is in heaven. The purpose of the light that you have, the purpose of the good works, the purpose of all that God gives you is to be used not to build you up, but it's for the glory of Almighty God. And he says, you're to shine that light. You're to be the salt of the earth. I travel around, and I count it a blessing to be able to travel. And sometimes I meet with very small groups of folk to worship the Lord. And it doesn't discourage me as long as the Lord is there. I count it a great blessing. But God doesn't have to use great numbers. I'll share a verse that convicted me of this years ago. I went to a church up in New York that hadn't met in probably 80 years, and it had been announced. The brother that invited me to come had put it on the radio, and he I mean, he put it on the newspaper. He put a sign out front. I went up the day before and got to church, the church building early, and one person came. And I thought, you know what? Lord says, where there two or three are gathered together in my name, if you come to worship the Lord, I'll be there with you. And then I realized that each and every time that we worship is a blessing and a miracle from God. And from that point on, I tried not to take for granted. But I want to show you how a small group can have a cleansing effect. If you remember back in the time of Abraham and Lot, that there was great wickedness that was in the land. It said that Abraham was a friend of God, and God said, I wonder if I should tell Abraham. I mean, he's putting this there for our benefit. Should I tell Abraham what I'm about to do to these wicked cities of Sodom and Gomorrah? That I'm about to destroy these wicked cities? Should I tell Abraham that? I know Abraham. He commands his children and those that are with him after him in the ways of the Lord. Paraphrase the story for you. But God tells Abraham. And Abraham says, but God, how about if there's 50 that are righteous that are in the land? God, would you spare the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah if there were 50 that were righteous? God said, yes, Abraham, I'll spare the cities. Apparently, Abraham began to count, and he was coming up short, so he went back to God. Anybody ever going back to God? Abraham went back to God, and he said, how about, let's change it. Let's go to 45. Then he went back, and he said, God, I'm coming one more time. How about 40? And then he said, God, would you spare the cities? I'm not sure that there's 40, but how about 30? And then he went again and he said, God, one more time, how about 20? And then Abraham says to God again, God, I'm coming one more time. He says, God, would you spare the city if there's 10 that are righteous in the city? God said, I'll spare the city. There's little groups of the Lord's people that meet all throughout the land. And it may very well be that the Lord is sparing some of the cities because of the faithful few that meet and worship the Lord Jesus Christ. We meet with a little group in New York City once a month, and we have wonderful services. Some of you here have been there. Brother Kenny's preached there. It's a wonderful time. Sometimes we'll have as few as 6. Sometimes we'll have 35, and it ranges anywhere in between that. I'm not saying that that's the only group of folks that serve the Lord in New York City, but it's one group that I know about that meet to worship the Lord. It could be that the Lord spares some of these cities across the country because of a little handful of a few that worship the Lord in spirit and in truth. God said, I'll spare it for 10. You think your testimony doesn't make a difference? You think your witness doesn't make a difference? Don't let Satan sell you that lie. You do make a difference. You make a big difference. You make a big impact on others that are around you. Look at the impact that Sister Pat made on my life that she didn't even know about. You may make an impact upon other people's lives that you absolutely have no idea. You may not realize that you're making an impact upon their life. And it may affect them for the rest of their life. You ought to be praying that God would use you in that special way. In those early days, I wish Jeanette was here, Sister Jeanette. She wasn't able to make it today, but Dell and Jeanette would open their home up, George and Jamie and different ones. And every Friday night, we would all gather over at Dell and Jeanette's, and George and Jamie's, and they'd have cookout, they'd have desserts, we'd spend the weekend there, we'd talk about the things of the Lord. It was a wonderful, wonderful time. David Piles was there, Alan, Randall Johnson, many others that would gather, and those were really special, special times, and they made a difference in our life for the rest of our life. I'll never forget the one time that I still didn't have my real license. I was going on this permit, but Dell and Jeanette were having a singing at their house on a Sunday afternoon, and so I borrowed their great big 98 Oldsmobile. It was about this long. I mean, it was huge. Isn't that right, Brother Dell? And I borrowed it because it would hold a lot of people. And so after church, I went around and I picked up all the old people that I could get in the car. And I mean, it was packed, wasn't it, Brother Dale? They had a singing at the house and picked up all these old people that couldn't drive. And we get to the singing, and I thought, you know what? I forgot. I didn't call my dad and tell him that I was going to be doing that. And so I called my dad and he said, you've done what? I said, well, I picked up some elderly folks and taken them to a singing. He said, you get home right now. He said, I don't care what you've done. You get home right now. I mean right now. And probably he was upset because I didn't really have a driver's license to be going around picking up all these old folks. So all these folks that I'd taken to Dell and Jeanette's, they had to somehow figure out how to get all these people back home. But we did have some wonderful, wonderful times there. Well, it comes on down that Esther decided, I'm going to try to wrap this up real quick. It's really good. Esther decided that she would go before the king. She prayed and God impressed her that she should go before the king. And she says, I'll go before the king. And this is how she describes it right here. She said, go gather together all the Jews that are present. She told this report to go to Mordecai. She said, you tell him to go gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan. And she said, and fast for me and neither eat nor drink. Now, there's three types of fasting that are in the scriptures. This is an absolute fast where they didn't eat or drink. Your body can only go about 3 days without the fluid. It says, to neither eat nor drink for 3 days and nights. And she says, you have the people fast, you fast. And she said, then I'll go in before the king. And she says, I'll go to the king, even though I've not been invited to come to the king. And she says, and if I perish, I'll perish. But I'm going to go before the king, and I'm going to plead the case. And if it means that I'm going to perish, then I'll perish. But I'm going to pray that God will have mercy upon me. And it says that Esther then, the third day, through prayer and fasting of those that were around, it says that Esther went before the king, not knowing whether the king would grant her mercy, but praying and seeking God's direction, seeking his conviction and his strength along the way. Esther goes before the king, and I'm sure that she was like Nehemiah. As Nehemiah went before the king, it says he prayed before he got there, and he was even praying while he was in the presence of the king. I'm sure that Esther was praying all the way there, and she was praying while she was there. And it says that the king held out the golden scepter to her, and that meant that he granted mercy to Esther to hear her case. I'm going to paraphrase this to you real quick, real good story. Please go home, and as Brother George said, take this as homework. Great reading in the book of Esther. So Esther says to the king, she said, I'd like to share a request with you. He said, you ask anything of me, just whatever it is that you would like, let me know what it is, and you're the queen, I'll try to grant your petition, grant your request. And she says, well, I'd like to have a banquet, and I'd like to invite Haman, that's your right-hand man. I'd like for you to invite Haman to this banquet, and at the banquet, I would like, they actually have two banquets, I'd like for Haman to be there. I'll share my request at that point. They had actually two. Haman was bid to come quickly to this first banquet. And so in the first banquet, Esther reveals that she's going to have another banquet, and she wants them to come to that banquet, but she doesn't tell them exactly what all is going to take place at this. And so Haman goes home, and he tells his wife, her name is Zeresh, he tells his wife, he says, "You're not going to believe what happened to me today. I've been invited to the king's house by the queen. And I knew I had a great position, and I knew I was in with the king, but I'm in with the queen now. She's having a banquet, and I am on the VIP list. I'm going to be invited, and I'm going to be recognized, and I'm going to be honored." And he went home, it says, he went home joyful to tell his family. He called his family and friends together, and he said, "You just aren't going to believe how good this is. This is getting so good." But on the way home, he passed Mordecai. And when he saw Mordecai, it says that his anger and his wrath was over the top. That all of a sudden, he couldn't even enjoy being recognized by the king and all that position and all that had been given him, because of that resentment and anger that he had against Mordecai. And so he tells his wife, and we talked about having godly counselors yesterday, and his wife was not a godly counselor based on what she told him. He tells his wife, and he says, "Wife," he says, Zeresh was her name, he says, I can't even enjoy all this because there's still this man named Mordecai. And so his wife says, "Well, I tell you what, why don't you build some gallows for Mordecai? Then go to the king and ask that his life be taken. And then you can go on with your life and you can enjoy this position that you have with the king." And so he said, "Well, I'll do that." So Haman decides to go before the king. But the day before he goes before the king has a night that he has insomnia. And so during this insomnia, he calls for somebody to read to him. And so they go to the king's library and they get a book off the shelf from the king's library, and it's some of those old chronicles. And so the person that's reading this story to the king to put him to sleep begins to read this story about this man named Mordecai that sat at the king's gate and that overheard the conspiracy of these two individuals. And you remember that Mordecai reported it and they pinned it down in the chronicles? Well, this is the section that they were reading. I don't think it just so happened that they turned to that page. I believe God was blessing and he was providing for them. And so the king listens to that, and he says, "What did we ever do for that man named Mordecai? Did we recognize him for sparing the king's life? What did we ever do to honor Mordecai for sparing my life?" And they said, "You know what? We never did anything for him. We didn't. We pinned it down. That was the end of the story." So he's thinking about it, and he's thinking, "What should we do to honor this man named Mordecai?" So he calls in none other than his right-hand man, Haman. And he says, "Haman, I need your help here." Haman says, anything you ask of me, I'll help you any way I can. What do you need?" He says, "Haman, what would you do if you had somebody that you wanted to recognize, that you had somebody that you wanted to honor, what would you do?" Haman's thinking to himself, "You know what? He's talking about me. Who else could he be talking about? I mean, he esteems me so high, and surely he must be talking about me." And so Haman says, "Well, I tell you what I'd do, king, if it were me. I'd take the king's finest apparel. I'd take the king's crown. I'd take the king's horse. And then I'd get the king's number one man to lead the horse and let this individual that you're talking about ride on the horse. And I'd take the king's closest man that could to take the lead of the horse and go up and down Main Street. The king says, you know what? That's a great idea. He says, that's a great idea, Haman. Not only do I think that's a great idea, Haman, I want you to implement it for me. I want you to be the man. I want you to be the individual that's going to direct that horse down Main Street. And he says, Haman, you go find this man named Mordecai. Ouch. All of a sudden, things in his life changed. He goes home and he tells Zerah, his wife, he said, I got problems. And he tells her the story, and she says, you do have problems. The rest of the story goes like this, that the second banquet that was held, that Esther did bade through the king Haman's presence there. And Esther goes before the king in the presence of Haman, and she says, King, would you have mercy upon us? There's a decree that's been passed out, and she reveals that she herself is a Jew. And she said, would you have mercy upon us, and would you reverse this decree that this decree that's been passed to destroy the lives of all the Jews? And the king says, who is it that's conspired to take the life of the Jews? Haman sitting at the head of the table, she looks over at him and she said, it's that wicked man Haman. The king gets up and he goes to the patio and he's walking around and he's thinking, what am I going to do to this man Haman, who's attempted to destroy not only the queen but all of her people? Haman knows he's in trouble. Haman comes back into the queen's bedroom. The queen is on the bed. Haman gets up to her and he's pleading that the queen would intercede to the king on his behalf. And when the king comes back in, he sees Haman upon the bed of Esther, and that just makes him all the more furious. And so the king says to his wise men, what should I do? The end of the story goes that they told him, Haman built some gallows in his backyard. He built some gallows and they're sitting there for Mordecai. The king says, you go hang Haman on his own gallows. God used Mordecai. God used Esther, a young lady, to spare an entire nation of people. God uses people in miraculous ways. You probably are aware of this. I think I've mentioned it, that Elder John Gano was ordained out of the Hopewell Old School Baptist Church back in the 1700s. From a French descent, a humble family, believed and taught and preached the wonderful grace of Jesus Christ. Elder Gano was in the Revolutionary War, and he became personal friends with General George Washington. At the end of the Revolutionary War, He was referred to during that war as the fighting chaplain. And at the end of the war, he was called on by General George Washington to have the closing prayer. And then he was called on after the prayer to baptize above 40 troops. I believe it was in the Delaware River. The story goes, and there's a painting of Elder Gano baptizing George Washington. Another couple, Abraham Lincoln's parents, his mother died at an early age. But they were members of a little backwoods church, a little pigeon primitive Baptist church in Kentucky. Church is still there, they still meet, and they still hold services. His mother, until her life was taken, raised her children in the nurture, the admonition of the Lord. The father, Tom Lincoln, who was a deacon in that church, to the best of his ability, continued to train up his son, Abe. Abraham Lincoln was later called, as you know, to be one of the greatest presidents of the United States. No doubt the influence that his godly mother had early in his life made a difference the rest of his life and impacted a nation. Elder Compton used to say that Sam Rayburn, the Speaker of the House, was the second most powerful man in the nation. I believe he was in the 60s. And when Sam Rayburn was an old man, he decided that he wanted to be baptized in a little white frame building in Tioga, Texas, where as a young person he had been taken to church. Elder Ball baptized the Speaker of the House, Sam Rayburn. When Sam Rayburn got to the door before walking down the aisle to present himself, keep in mind he's referred as the second most powerful man in the nation. When he walked in that little frame building, the back doors, and as he began to walk down the aisle, he took off his shoes and he said, "This is holy ground." You may never know how God uses you in the lives of others. We don't have to know. We're not attempting to be used to glorify ourselves, but we want to be used of God to glorify Him. Young folks, you can be used of God in the schools that you attend. You can be used of God with the friends that you have. You can be used of God in the workplace. Pray that God will show you opportunities that you can be used to honor and glorify Him. Who knows? Some folks say, I meet a lot of old folks, I love old folks, you know I do. I'm almost there myself, and so I do love old folks. But so many old folks say, I don't know why I'm still here. Did you know what? If you're still here, you're here for a reason. You're here to serve and honor and glorify the Lord. Sister Venable, not a doubt in my mind, but what God designed, that your husband would be in Albuquerque to encourage that little group, and God used him up to the very end. Pray that God will use you in your youth. Pray that He'll use you when you're raising a family, and pray that when you get to old age, that you'll be like those faithful saints of old, that serving the Lord is a blessing to you and that you are an encouragement to them. Pray that God will use you in that way. It's not about us, it's about God. And pray that God will use you all the way to the end. If you live to be 100 years old, you pray that you'll be used of God to honor Him. Shine your light that others, seeing your good works, are going to glorify Him. It's been a great joy to be with you. May God bless you.